Welcome to the IPX True North Podcast, where we connect people, processes, and tools. This is episode 12 with Joseph Anderson, the president of IPX, and Paul Powers, the founder and CEO of FISNA. They will be discussing uncovering untouched 3D data to advance and connect the enterprise.
Paul, thanks for joining us today. Been looking forward to this conversation for a little while. I've had the pleasure of knowing you now going on 3 years. The first time I met you, I think it had just been announced you were in a Forbes article for 30 under 30. And, you know, we've got this new up and coming founder, CEO with something pretty interesting. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So let's get started. Let's have a little fun here. I know most podcasts, they want to get right into the technical side of the house, what you do, how you do it, why it's going to solve world hunger. But let's start out a little differently. Like I said, I know a little bit. Why don't you tell us a little bit by yourself and how you came up with this organization called FISNA?
Oh, weird background. I'll try to be brief. Grew up in the Midwest, homeschooled, and was a huge nerd, really into the sciences and to end technology. And for the longest time, I swore I was going to be a quantum physicist or an abstract physicist of some sort, and indeed studied astrophysics briefly at Harvard. But really quickly after starting, realized that it's a lot different than I thought it was going to be. You have to go get grants for everything, and you can't just go change the world on a whiteboard anymore. You have to actually have funding and stuff. And I was pretty young then. I was 16, but I didn't come from money, so I had to pay for it somehow. And I'd already started up a little company. It was just a tutoring company at the time. It grew to something bigger. But I realized, you know, this is back in the time when like Facebook was becoming a thing, or Facebook really wasn't quite a thing yet, but you were seeing that out in Silicon Valley, these startups that were really moving humanity forward faster than we had ever seen in the past. And I just thought that was super exciting. I thought from a very early age, I knew that's exactly what I wanted to do. So I thought, okay, the degree doesn't really matter. Then if I'm going to start a company, probably should get something somewhat general, so it's not overly specific. But I thought, you know, the coolest people or the coolest companies seem like they're started by really weird people. And I thought maybe I wasn't weird enough yet. So I thought, let me go do something totally different. And went over to Switzerland for an exchange year, just to kind of, you know, rethink what I was going to do, and learned German. Ended up going to German law school. So going from astrophysics to German law, I'm pretty sure very few people have made that jump. And German law is exactly as much fun as it sounds. And it's at least as hard as it sounds. It was not fun. It was extremely boring. But my whole thought was, this will make me stand out a bit. This will challenge me. This will be hard. It'll be really hard. And, you know, mostly because of the language. And then also having to support myself while I'm away, I'm going to have to really get resourceful. But I'll meet a lot of people. And that all turned out to be true. Probably shaved some years off my life going to that program, though, because it was a nightmare. Remember the first class I had, it was called administrative law. And I asked the guy next to me what administrative, the German word, what word was. And he said, it means that you're screwed. You don't have a chance. And luckily he was wrong and I ended up passing. The idea for FISNA came out of law school. That's why I gave that big background, because law is so boring. And I'm so much more of a left brain person. I love the sciences, love technology, that I really couldn't stand listening to another lecture on German construction zone law unless I absolutely had to. So I thought, let me specialize in something more interesting. And that was with science background, patent law. And I focused on, it just made the whole program more almost enjoyable. And what I noticed really quickly in patent law was that we could find all kinds of intellectual property infringements, like someone stole your IP, like your logo, or plagiarized your right, something that you wrote. But when it was three-dimensional, like someone stole a thing that you invented, we couldn't find where they got it from. Even if we had a pretty good idea that it was online somewhere, there was no way to do it. And I looked online and I found some tools called like geometric search. And I thought, oh, cool, this might actually work. But when we tried these tools out, they were not really geometric search. They were more like, these two things are kind of alike. This is the same category, or these two things look pretty similar, but you couldn't find parts and parts, etc. So rather than just leaving it at that, I became really obsessed with the topic and thought we need to create a different way to approach this problem. We have to bridge this gap between what's physical and what's digital so that the digital can understand the physical. And the only way to do that was through a universal language, which would be mathematics. And that's how I got into starting this company. And years later, we eventually created the algorithms, patented them. And I found out that the use case that I had in mind was only a very, very tiny fraction of the value there. We had actually created a lot of value by cracking that code, if you will, for engineering and for procurement, for maintenance and manufacturing and a whole bunch of other fields just through that core technology.
You know, and this is kind of where, you know, I got excited when I started researching FISNA and trying to figure out is just another IT solution with fancy buzzwords, right? I mean, I've been doing this for over 20 years, various careers prior to my current position at IPX, and even with our current client base, right? We see a lot of IT solutions. We hear a lot of buzzwords, right? Digital transformation. But the reality is we're in a continual state of digital transformation. In my early days in automotive, you were still using Mylar and drafting tables, right? And so I've been a part of, you know, going into PDM systems, going into ERP, the PLM phase, which, we're still in, somewhat comically. In the early 2000s, we were all sold that you're going to be able to buy one PLM tool, one PLM IT solution, and it was going to solve all your pains, right? From everything from HR into marketing into design into manufacturing. And I think, you know, the truth starting to reveal itself within the last few years that you're going to need the proper platform. And from a platform, it's a framework. And from a framework, that's when you get into algorithms, you know, from your solution side of the house into what we do from hierarchy. And when we talk about artificial intelligence, and when we're getting into this 3D world and true, and we hear a lot of people say digital threads and digital twin, but what we're talking about is the ability to not only search on a 3D model, but perform verification and validation on the model itself. Mm-hmm. And this is where FISNA really piqued my interest. And from an IT perspective, we see solutions getting thrown at us all day to talk about or vet. And I'm pretty picky about that. If anyone's seen any of our podcasts, this might be our actual first, if not second, solution podcast. And I think there's something special about FISNA. And I want to dig into that a little bit, if you're okay.
Absolutely.
All right. So first question, why, if I'm an enterprise client, even small, medium sized, but let's focus on enterprise right now, because I think that's going to be the majority of our audience on this podcast. Large enterprise entities who have invested, we all know they've invested heavily into PLM over the last decade. Some of them have been rip or replace. Some of them have added on. And so now we kind of have these bespoke niche PLM systems. We have our CAD. We probably have some level of MES, even though we're still using Microsoft Excel spreadsheets for MES. Where's FISNA fit into all this from a corporate perspective? And I'm going to talk a little bit about the things you're doing for the public in a little while. But from a corporate enterprise perspective, I'd really like you to dig in and get technical on what you're really able to do and what the value is from an enterprise level, and how FISNA, the solution, really empowers all of the other platforms, the other frameworks that they might or may be moving to for the future. Where's FISNA's role in all of this?
It's a great question. And I think the short answer is right in the center. What a lot of companies have, they call it digital thread. People talk about digital twin. But at the end of the day, what they really have is a bunch of metadata and a lot of manually entered information. And what we found with FISNA, and this is, I think, the best inventions in history, and I come from accidents. And FISNA, we did not intend to go down this route. We got pulled into this route by people from these companies with these solutions, with PLM, with MES, et cetera, saying, I need what you have to work within my system or to add to my system because it'll fulfill the promise that PLM was supposed to fulfill. I'm not downplaying PLM at all. Those are very useful systems. What FISNA does is it makes those models that you have, all that three-dimensional data, if you will, from these models, it makes it actionable. It makes it to software as if just as logical as text. So if you're in a PLM environment, to give you a specific example, let's say you're an engineer and you're in the process of designing something. Well, there's a good chance that what you're designing either already exists or is a derivative of something that already exists. And today, there are various statistics you can find all around the web. Everyone has a different opinion, but a huge amount of time is spent searching for parts in PLMs because you can't just say, I'm looking for that one bracket thing over there. You have to give a part number, be more specific, and it's really hard to find those parts. And so what ends up happening all the time is that companies, they redesign them from scratch. And that creates problems, not just for the engineer, but then down the line as well. But let's just start with the engineer for now. The engineer is starting totally from scratch and is, maybe they've spent time already, they've wasted looking for a part. But let's say they don't find it, then they redesign it, which is even worse. So you're designing a part from scratch and wasting all the time that goes into that. And now you're entering this part as a new part for to your organization. Now you have to find the right vendor for that, or you have to create a manufacturing process for it. The engineer doesn't, not only do they potentially waste a lot of time, they potentially recreated the problem in the past. You might have just recreated a part that for whatever reason causes machines to break down, needs to be rebuilt or needed to manufacture differently than you might think. There's already intelligence in your company that's not being utilized because people aren't getting to the underlying data at the beginning. So what FISNA does is we have APIs that'll connect with your PLM, they'll connect with your systems. It syncs with them. And it analyzes that data. The very first thing you should do if you get a FISNA is go through the automated classification program. It's not a complicated thing at all. Your models get pulled in and it says, these models all look like they're in the same categories. And so if you have things labeled incorrectly or you acquired a company and they labeled them differently, now they're organized in a way where they're easy to find. The metadata that you've already saved on these models, be it in your PLM or elsewhere, also gets synced up with these models. And because we understand how these models are related to each other, not only can you find a model with a model, but you can find a model with a different name. If I call part A, and part B, but they're the same thing. Some people might call it part B, some people call it part A, but with FISNA, you can search either way and you'll still find the part. You can find the part through a description because of the machine learning, through a part or even a component of it. The really unique thing about FISNA that separates us from everything else is that we don't just understand parts at the full part level. We understand them comprehensively geometrically. So think of it like autofill. If you design a component, you could design just a ring, just the very bottom, just the, or if that, and FISNA can tell you exactly where that geometry has been found in the past. So you don't have to redesign that model from scratch. You can search it through a keyword, you can search it through something else, it's already categorized for you. Or if you want to find that exact part, you can do it with the search. So that's engineering. We make them more effective and make them, it's essentially making them as effective and efficient as a software engineer, because your computer can now understand geometry in a way that allows you to reuse it in ways that were just impossible before. But because that engineer redesigned a bunch of parts, there's a secondary problem. You have, I don't know the exact numbers, right? But from what I can tell so far from our customers, this is my personal estimate, right? This is roughly the numbers. So far, it seems like about, on average, 30% of parts have duplicates. But when those parts have duplicates, I think the average is around 34 duplicates per part. What does that mean? That means that when you order a third of your parts, and these are typically components, et cetera, you're ordering them potentially from up to 34 different vendors. So you're ordering them unnecessarily when you already have the part just under a different part number, but you're also wasting a fortune by buying these parts in small quantities from all over from various vendors instead of consolidating them and buying them all from one. the best of the 34 vendors. And if they can't deliver, the second best of the 34 vendors. When you're relying on 34 vendors, you're not just wasting money though. One catastrophe that we saw come out of COVID, and people are still experiencing this today, is a huge disruption in supply chains. A lot of these disruptions, like what we saw with PPE gear, for example, are unnecessary disruptions. It's not that the parts aren't out there, it's that people don't know how to find them. So if you know that all 34 vendors can supply the same part and one of them goes down, you no longer are reliant on them for that part. So you don't have to shut down your machine. You don't have to slow down production of parts. You don't have to stop manufacturing or creating things. You can continue because you know that there are duplicates. And that same problem persists then over on to part equipment in the field. It's not just in the procurement phase, but also your customers have problems. So they've bought this machine. Let's say it's a car, or it's a machine that makes parts, right? They need spares. And if they think that there are 34 different parts required to that are all the same thing, they think they're 34 separate items, and they run out of spares for one, they're now shutting down their machines and waiting for replacements. And we hear horror stories all the time of this happening. And so how does FISNA get deployed? Well, like I said, it gets deployed as very often it can be a standalone, but very often it can be integrated with a PLM service or really any tool. We have APIs that make it pretty flexible. But it's also integrated in the supply chain. And so so you have that connection between the buyer and the designer of the thing to buy. And then lastly, it's connected with people out in the field. So if you're in the field and you see something and you want to buy that, rather than relying on tribal knowledge, like, oh, Bob's been here for 30 years. Bob knows what everything is. Bob says that's part A. Well, Bob might not know, but other departments who call it B, C, D, et cetera. Or relying on a barcode or an RFID, all of which are just going to get you to one part number. You could take a picture. And FISNA has a really unique technology, not just for 3D models, but with pictures as well, that'll allow you to identify precisely what part that is. And because we know how these models relate, it doesn't end there. We can say, that's a bolt, but it's not just any bolt. It's bolt ABC. It's also called XYZ, and these are the other alternatives to it. But this is how it can be used. And it turns out that the bolt on your lawnmower is the exact same thing as the bolt in your car. So if you need your car to run again, just take the bolt off your lawnmower and put it in your car. You don't have to wait 3 weeks for a replacement part to come in. Stupid example, but you get my drift, right?
Unless you need to mow your yard, because then it gets complex.
Then you just need to go back and forth, right?
Okay.
And decide what was more important.
Okay with that.
Yeah, exactly. Those are just some examples. So it's really being faster and more effective in engineering, cutting down on costs and procurement, identifying parts in the field and optimizing inventory management, maintenance, and then there's quality control. I mean, we do have people who scan parts, and because we can relate them so well, we can show you even with a relatively unsophisticated scanner, as far as the scanning industry is concerned, not necessarily the most high-end scanner, we can automatically compare these two parts and show you whether or not something is out of tolerance and where it's out of tolerance without you having to manually go in and program anything. You can see there are a lot of use cases here, right? So we don't try to build, you know, a completely different set of unrelated tools, because at the end of the day, what we want is this comprehensive tool that can be used ad hoc. Like you can say, I'm just going to use it for engineering. I'm just going to use it for procurement. But if you want, the real value in my mind is when you use it throughout the organization, because when somebody in the field is saying, hey, this part broke after 2 hours of use or 2 months of use, this thing is cost twice as much as we thought it was going to cost to produce. We had to do all these steps to manufacture this part. If all that data gets fed back into the same system, then when the engineer is designing the next part, they can already foresee the problems that'll happen if they design things in one way versus another. We can actually predict that, how much it'll cost, how to manufacture it, as long as you have that data. So that's a digital thread. But it's not there. It's not a digital thread because people are forcing the work, forcing their employees to do hard work of entering metadata. It's there because you already have the data. You just didn't have the technology to extract it. And that's what FISNA does.
And I want to break this down a little bit. This is where I get a geek out a little. You know, I've been a CM2 proponent for 20 years. I got CM2 certified when I was an apprentice at GM. And in the early days of CM2, when they were talking about product hierarchy or physical hierarchy or administrative hierarchy, there was some nomenclature within the text. Once computing power catches up, you will now have the ability to do advanced algorithms. And everything you're talking about to our attendee base and anyone that's a CM2 grad understands what you've done now is created a full end-to-end hierarchy from a 3D perspective. And I'm going to break that down a little bit further, and you can tell me I'm wrong here. But this is where I get really excited, because I think companies aren't even on the verge of understanding of what they could do with something like FISNA. What FISNA is, in a layman's perspective, in Joe Anderson's words, and Paul, again, if I'm wrong, just stop me now, and we could edit this out if you want. We've created, for anyone that's ever used a usage report or aware use report, and in the 90s and the early 2000s, you're talking about thousands and thousands of pages printed and hundreds of trees sacrificed just to get a physical printout of where a part could potentially be used. And the majority of the time, those were wrong. That's just to understand the impact on the physical side of a change. And what I think I'm hearing and what I think I've researched is FISNA is really the first solution out there that provides an end-to-end dynamic, and dynamic, I don't use that word lightly, dynamic where used view from a 3D perspective. So I could enter in any level, any metadata item, and I could get a holistic dynamic view from a 3D perspective of everything I'm touching in a physical world. And That's pretty damn exciting. Once a company hears that, and I apologize for using an expletive. I normally don't do that, but I want individuals to understand what you truly said. It's not only to understand the impact of a potential change. You now have the ability, I believe, and this is something, again, Paul, please add on to. So now if I could do this compare, I could go out and now I have the ability, we don't want to admit it, to our board or our shareholders, how many bolts we've created that are exactly the same, just with different part numbers, because we've been inefficient and ineffective with our processes and our systems. But now I have the ability to do that with FISNA. Not only can I do that, but Paul, can we do a compare of all of those models, all of those bolts, and go, this is the bolt we should be using and why? These are the bolts that have to be scrapped because we didn't realize, even though we were still using them, they were causing downstream issues because of this change we did 3 years ago. Do I now have the ability to see all the bolts I have and do some analysis internally, right? And actually identify the bolt we should be procuring going forward? Is that capability there?
Yes, it's there and then some. So I love that you asked that question. One of the coolest things that I geek out over, and this is truly me showing my nerdy side here, but I think it'll resonate with anybody who's listening. If you have a single model, let's say that it's saved as like an STL, .step, whatever, you choose the format because we're file type agnostic, but it's not even an assembly. Obviously it could be, but let's say it's not. It's one solid object in a CAD file. You upload that, let's say it's a motor. We can tell you, let's use your example of bolts. Every single bolt that is in your database and potentially ones outside of it, which we can talk about later, that fit inside that motor, but we can also, not just that they do, but we highlight that. We can actually show you, this is where they go, boom, 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 inside of the motor. How many times they're used? This is the pattern that they create. And these are the alternatives. Do you want to see what it looks like? You don't, and if you say, well, they don't need to be 100% duplicates, because some of the things we designed were just a tiny bit different, aesthetically different perhaps, right? Or maybe even functionally different by just a little bit. Are they still useful? We show you how it would fit into that model. And through a highlighting process, we show you whether or not it will fit the requirements of each part. So very quickly, you can see what the standard part should be, which one you should choose to be the standard. And then you can go through and say, we don't need to use the others. A lot of companies we've talked to say, we're hesitant to eliminate duplicates because of our BOM structures, right? Our bill of materials, they're all dependent on these parts. And the answer is, if it's a big enough company, I would say, I agree with you. Dude, that's going to be a really time-consuming process. So don't do it. Just say, this is the stand, just use the search functionality. Every time that you're going to order something, all you have to do is push that button. It'll show you, this is the standard that you should be using here. And this works just as well, if not better, and can be procured for cheaper, et cetera. So we can absolutely do that today.
Okay, now I've got to ask the questions I'm sure you're tired of answering. But can you do
Not at
it?
all.
Can you do it with speed? How long is it going to take? It's what's the performance? And then the second one is tell me about security. So we know we work with defense contractors across the globe. We work with various governments from a model perspective. Can you tell me about performance? But also security, export control, ITAR. All those fancy words where it does get some companies in trouble because they don't have good control over certain models or certain components within a model.
The speed will blow your mind. One thing that we hear very often from our customers is that they were just shocked about how fast it was able to make we were able to make these predictions. Now, obviously, we're under the same laws of physics as everybody else. So if you are uploading a model that's a terabyte in size, your internet speed is going to be, it's going to take a while to upload. But taking that out of the equation, it's a very fast process. And if when you do a geometric search against even millions of models, you're not talking about, I'll run the search and I'll get a report in a few days or a few hours or whatever. You're talking about, I'll get a report in a matter of seconds. And if you're running a report on or a search on how models are related, especially in the enterprise environment, which is a paid environment in Prisma, it's I don't want to say instantaneously because it depends instantaneous because if you have a huge database and it's a huge part, it can take a second or two, but it's very, very fast. It has a lot to do with how we index the model. So the reason that we're so fast, and I would strongly argue that we're at least a cup one or two orders of magnitude faster than anyone in a similar space. The reason we can do that is also because of how we break down the model. We think of the model at the end of the day, we've converted into something that software can understand. What can software understand? Software can understand digitized data. So we've created a DNA sequence, if you will, for that model. FISNA is actually short for physical DNA. At the end of the day, we view model data as DNA almost in an analogous sense. And so it's basically performing a lengthy text search, if you think about it, right? It's not having to do all the processing. We've already indexed the data. It doesn't have to reanalyze every single model. It's very, very fast. On the other side, it's fast to the extent that I've never, at least not recently, since we made all the enhancements we have in the past few years, heard a complaint personally. Maybe someone said something, but I've never heard anyone say, I wish this was for us a little bit faster. Speed seems to be one of our one of the things that makes us really stand out. When it comes to security, I couldn't agree with you more. This is a question that comes up on literally every sales call with literally every customer. And if you think about the data that we're dealing with, it's obvious that security matters. Our customers, I can't, there are a number that I can't name because of NDAs that, and we respect those. One I can mention because it's been made public by them is the Department of Defense, the Defense Logistics Agency, where we have a database of their data. Their security system is obviously very robust. And that's the same security system that we give to all of our other customers, which are also Fortune 500 or above type companies. And they're in automotive, they're in defense, et cetera. So security is a big deal, but it's also important because of the nature of what we're dealing with. We're dealing with your CAD models. We're dealing with your 3D data, your intellectual property. Under no circumstance can that fall into the wrong hands. I tell people internally a lot, imagine that you're dealing with people's social security numbers here. That's how secure this has to be. You cannot let anybody touch this. And as far as how we protect it, there are several ways. So we have people on staff right now who focus just on that, just on security. But when we built the architecture, we built it at the with security in mind first and foremost. So we use Google Cloud, but you'd be shocked at how much security actually comes with the arrangement that we have with Google Cloud. There's we have top of the line cloud security. And a lot of people say, well, isn't the cloud dangerous? Is the cloud less secure than on-prem? And the answer, to be totally frank, and we've done a lot of research into this, is no, the cloud is almost certainly more secure than an on-prem installation, unless you happen to have the kind of, there are very few companies that can claim to have a more secure infrastructure than Google that has billions dedicated to securing its data. So that's one of the reasons that we went with Google, is because of security. In addition to that, there are, and if all the standard security things you would expect to have in place with encryption, et cetera, are in place, of course. But there's one, I'll call it like an X factor, if you will, that makes data insecure and FISNA crazy, crazy secure. And that is, what is that data when it gets into FISNA? Well, when we're matching parts, we're not reprocessing them and looking at your model to see how to match it to something else. We've already indexed the DNA of that model. Now that DNA is something that makes zero sense outside of a FISNA environment. And if you were to download it, it would be incredibly complicated to even begin to guess how that turns back into a model. And nothing's impossible when it comes to hacking, but I would actually say that that's about as close as it gets to being possible to reverse engineer from the PNA into the model, just because of how it works. It's not, you're not going to be able to take that data and then steal it and use it for something. In fact, if you remember, the first use case we had was intellectual property protection. So it's always been top of mind for us. And actually, one of the use cases, and I think that we're going to see more adoption of this in the future, but this has been something we've supported for a while, is cybersecurity. Cybersecurity is probably the wrong word, but the correct terminology, which I would say cyber detective work on the cyber side wouldn't really resonate with people. When there are modifications you can make to CAD models that are not displayable by CAD software. So if you have a tech savvy person get into your system and modify one of your models, they don't have to do it in CAD. They can do it at a much lower level of the code. CAD is not there to show you every atom of the thing that you're going to manufacture. It's there to show you roughly what something looks like based off of the design input you've given it. So you can make changes to a model that are literally invisible that CAD can't show. And then what happens? That model then gets passed on, it gets manufactured, and you don't know that there's a problem until it breaks, and hopefully no one gets hurt. But you've wasted a fortune and a lot of time. The reason that FISNA can pick up on those changes is because we don't rely just on the view of something. We rely on at a very low level of the code of how some things change. So anything changes physically in a model, we pick up on it. So not only is FISNA not a risk to your company, it's actually a protector of your data and can tell you if something's wrong, whether it's an internal mistake or an external invasion attack, if you will, of your data.
Which is pretty astounding, because you got real-time security, is what you're saying. From a model perspective, you have the monitoring capability to understand if any unauthorized changes were made to that model, which just isn't there today. And most organizations aren't even exploring. You know, they're trying to control that on a user base, right? And that's taxing from an individual perspective. One thing that you touched on as well from a DNA, all of our CM2 clients understand that's been our mantra for a long time, from the physical side to product side, but also from a company, from an organization. Each organization has its own unique DNA, and having the ability to go in and assess that's been kind of our bread and butter for a long time. And when you start talking about the CM2 DNA from a product perspective, breaking that hierarchy down from a metadata, but also on the administrative or the application side. And that's the one question I'd like to ask you. So you have all the model capability. Are you also able to identify all of the environmental, say, requirements for that component or for that model? And maybe that's a future technology, and that might be something I haven't found yet in any of my readings. But so I could get all this digital DNA of a model of a product now, utilizing FISA. But with that physical data also comes a lot of application. It could be regulatory, it could be environmental, it could be client specific requirements. Does FISA have any capability to also identify that per part number, right? Let's go back to that bolt analogy. So I have all these part numbers that I've created, and my best guess from my world, and reuse is a big one, right? And I think your 30 to 34% is actually light. They typically throw those numbers around because companies don't want to admit how much they're actually burning from a reuse perspective. But let me get back on track. Apologies. So you got all the physical data. You've got the dynamic 3D model. I've got all that, which is a rich amount of data, which we've been discussing for a while. Do I also have the capability to understand and see quickly, maybe this is the linkages into the other systems, the application requirements that state how that component, how that part should be operating in the field, and from a regulatory perspective, how it should be deployed in certain applications?
Sure. Before I answer that, I just want to go back to one quick statement you made, which is the real-time monitoring. Just to be totally transparent, I never want anyone to think that we have something that we don't. So it's not real-time monitoring. It's the ability to check for any changes that happen. So you would have to actually click to see. Just in the spirit of full transparency, I wanted to make sure that part was clear. To answer your question, the limitation on what FISNA can predict or can associate really comes down to, with our current technology, whether there's a correlation at any level with the part itself. So if you're asking, can you predict the environmental conditions that this should be used in? Well, yes and no. It depends on what data we have available from your company. If your company says, hey, these parts 1 through 5, let's say, they're all related to each other. They're all in the same genre. They're all, maybe have certain things in common. They are used in these conditions, right? Well, if we can correlate the geometry and the associated data with between these models, and so we can tell you there's a good likelihood that based on the data we have on these models, that what holds true for them would hold true for this, and vice versa, right? If there's contrasting data saying, well, something that had another feature here looked like it was used in a different application, the predictions you're going to see, we're not going to be like, use it like this, and that's the only thing you can do. We're very transparent, and we believe it needs to be up to the company what decision they make. So what you would see is a bar, and in this case, two bars. One would be, let's say, use under environmental condition A, and one would be use under environmental condition B. So if we have contrasting data, some models were used like this, some were like that, and they both have a lot in common with this, those bars are going to be conflicting based off of how similar the model is to that data versus that data. And as more information is learned, those bars will start to separate. One will become a clear winner over the other. You can manually intervene and speed up that process 10x, right? So once you know, you see this prediction and you say, FISNA says it's about, say, 67% sure it's this and 33% sure it's that, just to make it really simple, right? You could say, oh, I know the answer is that it's for model or for environmental condition A. So you click on that. That really ramps up the machine learning into full gear. So now it's going to say, oh, cool, I get it now. So you're saying this is an A. Okay, so it learned a lot from just that button. Maybe not just for that model, but for other models too. Because now it's saying the model that you just said is A has actually more in common with these models than it did with the B one. So now we're a lot more confident that it's environment A than B. That might be a complicated way to put it. But what I'm trying to tell you is, as long as there's a connection between the model and anything that you want to track, it can be predicted in theory, as long as your company has some data. You don't need a lot of data. But the nice thing about 3D is that there's so much more information we can pull out of a 3D model than you could ever pull out of pure metadata or even pure 2D data. And so you might think, well, Google has a hard time telling a blueberry muffin apart from a chihuahua. How can you tell me that this one this one component, which is like slightly different from this other component, should be manufactured in a totally different way, or be used or a different way, or might fulfill a standard that the other one doesn't. Well, it's because we have infinitely more information about these parts. And so any delta, any change between them is something that the system takes into account. So it says, okay, the change between these two, let's say it's the threading. The threading was the only difference between these two models. And I've seen that in a couple of cases now. If the threading's there, all of a sudden it's A, and if the threading's not there, then it's B. That makes it a lot easier for us to predict. That allows us to predict very, very quickly how to categorize models, but also how to make predictions about manufacturability, use in the field, certifications, et cetera. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. At the end of the day, it's about data and it's about linkages. And if a company's invested in those linkages and the data, the investment comes in and we just talk about deliverables. I'm breaking this way, way down. From a CA2 perspective, if a company starts getting their hierarchy, getting their data in order, getting all those linkages from the physical and administrative, there's a whole lot of capability.
Exactly.
And that's exciting to me. And the reality is I could talk about this for the next 3 hours, but our moderators on both sides of the house are going to tell us any podcast over an hour, people are going to go to sleep. I don't think that's the case, but I want to talk about one more thing. And I've been trying to figure out, and I challenge myself, as you know, how to slip in a pun, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to just give you some grace and give you a timeout for it. But you and I talked about, this a year or two ago, and I couldn't say, you just told me just to keep my mouth shut, and I did, which isn't easy to do because it's pretty exciting. And I don't want anyone to go to this website that only has a couple minutes, but FISNA launched something called Things. So if you were to go to things.com, be prepared to spend a lot of time there. If you enjoy just browsing things that you didn't know someone else had the capability to design, or a dream or an idea that you had as a child, or you just like seeing different items, different cool, unique designs. Honestly, a lot of this is art. This site has me completely enamored, actually, with the potential for small companies all the way into large organizations, but also for individual designers. You know, I've discussed my time with GM many, many years ago, two decades ago. When you wanted something designed outside of the house, you know, you just had a cool idea. I want something designed so I could have it built so it does a certain function, or I have a cool idea for a toy. You went and you identified maybe one or two people you knew, you know, designers and drafters, and you had to talk them in over a dinner or something to create this design for you and this model, 2D model. And then you had to go find somewhere where it could be produced. But with technology and 3D printing and where the world's headed, things just, it blows me away on where you're potentially headed. And I don't want to put any words in your mouth, but can you discuss, why FISNA and everything you've been trying to accomplish over the last 3 years, right? You're still an Ohio-based organization, right? You're not in Silicon Valley. You've got a recent impressive funding arm. You're seeing growth. You're getting into new markets, and in parallel, you decide you're going to do things. Tell me a little bit about that, Paul. Other than us being two self-proclaimed geeks from the Midwest that apparently also wear t-shirts under their suit jackets. Why things, and what's your vision there?
So there's a really clear, that's a really good question. I'm glad that you asked why behind thanks. For those who are listening, it's spelled with an A, so thangs.com. It's 100% free, and you can do whatever you'd like on the site. There's no paywall anywhere. Thanks serves a couple purposes. So for the end user, let me start with them. If you're looking to 3D print something, if you're looking to have something custom manufactured, or maybe you have a design then you want to find things that are relevant to it through a geometric search, or you've designed something that has components and you want to know where you can get those components, Thangs is a, it's I would say right now, probably the fastest growing 3D community in history by the numbers. And it sort of works like a Google, but for 3D. And so Thangs does that in two ways. So, of course, you can search with text, obviously. You can also search with the model. You can use a model from just about any major format you can think of and search against not just what people have uploaded to Thangs, which you're right, there's a lot of art, there's a lot of things that are, hobbyist type materials, but also very practical parts from suppliers around the world. You can search that geometrically in Thangs as well and tell you, we can say, here are all the parts that either match one to one what you've uploaded or that are inside of what you've uploaded or that are your what you've uploaded is inside of, if you will, ways that that could be applied. And so, and we did that for a couple of reasons. But before I go into that, let me tell you one more thing about what it's for. It's not just there to search, it's also there to change how people collaborate. One of the most upsetting things to me from a macro perspective of about innovation is that we're only innovating, by most of the studies that I've read anyway, on the hardware side about one-fifth as quickly as we could if hardware innovation was made as straightforward and reusable as software innovation. So that means if you have mechanical engineers on staff, know that their ability to engineer something is probably 20% of what it should be. And that's not their fault. That's because of a lack of software. It's because software has been built for software for a long time and not for hardware. So we wanted to change that. And so we created something that we're now calling Thangs Workspace. It's an alpha. It's not public yet, but it will be in the near future. And there's a form where you can sign up for the beta version if you're interested, which will come out after alpha, obviously. And what that does is it works like a GitHub, if you're familiar with GitHub, but for 3D. And the CTO of GitHub's actually on our board of directors, and really understood this from the day I met him, Jason Warner. The potential is there to allow people to work together in a more in a simpler and more automated way. So it automates version control, automates revision control, shows you changes that have happened between one version and another, and it doesn't care about file format. So you can design in one file format, I can design in another, and it'll still show you what's changed between these models, how are they related and how they're not. And there's a lot more coming with Thangs. We have a lot of other ideas that'll be coming down the pipeline. But the reason we started as a company was because of enterprise, but also because of our long-term goal. So that how does it help enterprise? How does it help the people who are probably listening to this podcast, why should they care that Thangs exists? Thangs is not as powerful as business enterprise. It cannot do the comparisons, and 90% of what we've talked about, it cannot do right now. It can find models, but it won't show you how they're related, et cetera, yet. That's coming, but it can't do that yet. And the reason you should care is because in the very near future, Thangs is going to be connected to the enterprise service. In the sense that you can now search not only in your own database, but the globe. And when I say the globe, I don't, again, it's not just what people have uploaded. We actually have crawlers that work very much like Google Image crawlers do, but they search for 3D data. And so they can tell you what you've just uploaded. Here are the suppliers you could order this from that you've worked with in the past. And here's a ton of others that can also give you that part that you've never even heard of, or maybe that you've never worked with. Right. So it allows you to automate a lot of that procurement process. So the ability to, and if you're a designer, search for parts that maybe no one in your company has worked on before, but they're made public. By the way, if you don't want to make things public, Thangs has a private version where you can, in other words, you can save things privately. And that also doesn't have paywall. You can for free upload private models, use it as a model repository, 100% free. And that data doesn't go anywhere. So that's what it does for enterprise. Let's talk about what it does for a company. The strategic reason we created Thangs, which sounds crazy to most people, like you're a startup, you're moving fast, you've got this enterprise successful and this enterprise software that's very successful, and there's a lot of people lined up for it, and now you go create something that's extremely expensive to run, and very hard to build, and most of the users are from a slightly different audience. Why are you doing that? And the answer is that the big picture in this company, I mentioned to you at the beginning of this call, the initial idea was just around intellectual property control, very narrow focus. And most companies do something wrong. They have a huge vision at the beginning, think they can make 500 different things. And then eventually they realize they have to be very narrowly focused. FISNA is weird because it's the exact opposite. We had a very narrow focus at the beginning. Then we realized, oh my gosh, we actually fix a lot of different problems. We have hundreds of problems we've been approached about, hundreds of use cases, the vast majority of which we haven't even begun to touch in this call. How do you create hundreds of companies from a tool? You can't. We can't create hundreds of different products. But what we can do is create a platform where, and on that platform, we can allow people to use APIs, so plugins essentially, to create different types of software than was possible. You know, so our strategy, just being very transparent, it really has three steps. You know, Thanks helps us to create awareness around this new technology, this new era of technology, and to make that a standard that people, everybody will expect to be able to match parts and see how they're related and automate collaboration. Second part is we have to solve a previously unsolvable problem with this previously impossible tool that we made. And we're doing that in the enterprise side. And that's most of what we spoke about. The reason that we're doing those two in conjunction is that the third and final step is to make that platform where people can work together. And then they'll have seen, hey, it solves a problem that wasn't solvable before and created a lot of economic value for companies. And it's something that a lot of people now know about and expect to have. And now they'll create new applications. And that's really where I see the future of FISNA going. But of course, we're going to stay focused on the SaaS application that we have here as well, the enterprise application and the and thanks.com, the consumer application.
And all of that, I mean, to summarize it, it's not going to be easy, right? But that's where we're at. I'm supposed to summarize everything we talked about and wrap this up. For me personally, and you know, we just talked right over it because it's really not that big of a deal, but it used to be. It's not just about collaboration and communication. It's the ability to, you just really don't care what software you use to create your model. Collaborate. It doesn't matter. And when you start thinking about multi-sided organizations that use different CAD environments, you talk about the model-based future across the supply chain and ad ecosystem or ecosystem. FISNA's that kind of glue, you know, from a solutions perspective. And it's that the DNA, and that's kind of what from a process, from a data model linkages is that CM2 DNA that we talked about. So from the capability and collaboration, I see a lot of exciting things. So I've always told people, regardless if you're small or large company, if you provide value, your network and your friends are going to continue to want to work with you. So FISNA is actually opening the door across the globe for a whole new network to thrive. And that's, you know, from Joe Anderson, Midwestern layman's perspective, not well at articulating things, but at the end of the day, FISNA is going to open up a new world. For an individual, a designer, a young 14-year-old girl in Nigeria that has a design aspiration, she's now, FISNA is opening the door to her to the CEO, Mary of GM. Right, it's a world that's never existed before, and I'm trying to hold my excitement a little bit so I can summarize in two more minutes with thanks, but that's where it's headed, and I see and applaud you for that vision, and it's exciting times. You have to be excited. Your board, your resources, your employees have to be excited to be a part of this, and I applaud you, Paul. You know, when we first talked about it many years ago, I grasped onto it right away. Because I'm all about empowering your network and expanding that to others and the underdog, right? I'm a, you know, you touched on it, that Midwestern underdog kid, and FISNA and things opens the door to a lot of underdogs, and it's great what we could do for large companies and small companies, but there's a whole other network you're opening it up to. And I want to say thank you for taking the time. I actually want to do another podcast to get into some technical and non-technical stuff, because I think that there's a lot of value here that we it's going to take a couple hours. So we might have to do a couple series, because I think this is a new perspective for companies, you know, and you touched on recalls, and anyone that's heard me speak anywhere, I think the complacency on recalls from a consumer base and from a executive base is is disappointing. And a lot of that's because we're not using these types of capabilities and our data, our metadata, our structure from the physical side, from the administrative side, it's all disconnected. And so we're rushing to get the latest product out the door with this much of new innovation. And when we do that, we're releasing something that's disastrous in the field. And we all have to admit, over the last 3 years, you'd have to have your eyes closed or your ears turned off to not hear and or see the recalls that have been placed onto the consumer base. So I'm not going to preach about that. Paul, thank you. This has just been an amazing podcast. Again, to you and the FISNA team, much like yourself, I know what it's like getting into a startup and a small company and growing that and the pressures you have and the growing pains that you're going to continue to have. But I applaud you and your team. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in today. Don't forget to subscribe and review the show. And for more information on IPX, visit ipxhq.com.